Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the 410th edition of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you an American perspective, our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers over at onceametro.com and the rest of the SB Nation family of websites. Come on in. Chat room is open. You can talk amongst yourselves if you like. If you have a question for me, I'll try to answer it to the best of my abilities. You know, when we talk about what goes on in this wonderful game of football, soccer, so many wonderful things happen on the pitch. Great saves, great goals, fantastic setups, great runs, last-minute lunges and, you know, clean challenges. Sometimes we talk about the negative side of football. We talk about what we need to do to make the game better, to try to avoid whatever happens anywhere else. Try our best not to think about it, or at the same time, how much we need to make sure certain things never, ever come to the game in our country. Because I would like to think that we, not so much that we're better than this, but I would like to think that while we have the passion for this game as Americans, I would like to think that we are better, smarter, and, you know, more of a common sense than what we watch and see when it comes to, like, pitch invasions, you know, fights in the stands, fights on the streets. I'd like to think that we're smarter than this, that we're better than this. But sadly, something happened in the EFL, in the championship, that has, to me, it's been very disturbing. And, you know, I don't mind talking about it because, you know, I would like to believe that I am not afraid to talk about the moments in our game, what needs to be improved, what can be improved, that there is no censorship of any topic that we can discuss. I'd like to think that we can discuss any topic out there, whether you're pro or con, any topic is open, because this is a show of fairness, and at the same time, this show can discuss anything and everything that is going on in this wonderful game of football. And that, my friends, for this intro monologue, going to discuss that horrible moment that was being played in England as Aston Villa taking on Birmingham City. Now, obviously, this matchup is a very bitter Midlands derby between these two sides, Birmingham versus Aston Villa. As we already have seen the video and the discussions, especially from Robbie Musto and Robbie Earle from NBC Sports Network with Rebecca Lowe, there was a supporter of Birmingham who ran onto the pitch, went right behind Jack Grealish, delivered a sucker punch from behind, and thankfully was tackled down by the police and security. And whenever you watch the video, he's celebrating this pitch invader, celebrating by kissing his fellow supporters. That is an absolute travesty to what probably is probably one of the better, possibly one of the better derbies in all of English football. We all know about Arsenal and Tottenham, Man United, Man City, Liverpool, Everton, and the many other old derbies that have continued to become big-time derbies in England. To see it go beyond that, beyond what goes on the pitch and what goes on beyond the stands, when you are walking or running onto the pitch and you are a fan of the opposition and you go right behind the player and you take a swing at him from behind, he's not even seeing you. First things first, be thankful it was not a knife. Be thankful he did not bring a weapon that could have been maybe, a Swiss Army knife, maybe a little axe of a hatchet of some sort, maybe a letter opener that looks like one of those swords, those mini swords. So to see this happening was very sad. As far as I'm aware of, I believe the punishment for this pitch invader, 14 days in jail. Obviously, Birmingham, they did not condone what one of their own did. They denounced it right away. And all I can say is that this is something that we need to make sure it gets nipped in the bud. We need to make sure that we don't do this again. Now, we know what happened in the playoffs last year in the second leg of the Eastern Conference Finals with one or two Red Bulls supporters interfering with some of the players from the seats. And thankfully, they'll never do that again. And hopefully, they will never do that again, because if they ever do that again, and if I've seen them do it and I've seen their faces, I would probably inform security about them, because for goodness sakes, we have no place for that. As a Red Bull supporter, as a supporter of any club in Major League Soccer, for the U.S. men's, U.S. women's national team, this type of shenanigans is not condoned by anybody. Anybody. It is absolutely wrong. It is flat out wrong. And it will start thinking and hoping and praying there will be no copycats on this. And there will be no copycats coming here to MLS. Which now gives me a lot to worry. We are seeing strange things happening within our stadiums. And I'm going to tie it into what's been going on with the situation with New York City FC and those supporters. I try my best to separate politics from sports. I believe that if you are going to watch a match or a game, depending on, doesn't matter what the sport is, baseball, basketball, the NFL, football, the National Hockey League, our politics should be set aside, because the only colors you should be worrying about are the jerseys that you wear that represent your club. what's been going on with New York City FC, and originally probably decided not to talk about this because it's too much of a hot button issue. But let me just say this: I don't like fascists. I don't like Nazis, especially Nazis, because I'm Jewish. And my grandmother, my mother's mother, back in World War II, was in the concentration camps. Towards the end of the war, thank God, so nothing terrible happened. But unfortunately, I lost my great-grandparents in the Holocaust. And I never knew them. I've never met them, but I've seen their pictures. I am against what some people in this world support. I am against it. I am against what goes on there. But whatever crimes they have committed on the streets of any major city, any town, any mid-sized city, does not mean that they are not allowed to be inside a sporting event. I hate their ideas. I hate their ideologies. But I am not going to try and find a way to force them to not be allowed inside the stadium, because the truth is the only way they get banned permanently is if they violate the code of conduct that is set forth by Major League Soccer, set forth by the clubs that play in those stadiums, whether it is a soccer-specific stadium, whether it is an NFL stadium, or in this case, whether it's Yankee Stadium. I understand. Those are the types of people that are terrible. Those are the types of people should not be given any sense of making themselves feel good for what they believe in, because I don't believe in that crap. But unless they break the code of conduct from Major League Soccer, there's nothing we can really do here. Does anyone remember the movie Minority Report with Tom Cruise? You are being arrested for a pre-crime. You're going into the past, and just before the crime happens, you're arresting the person who's about to commit said crime. It's not how it works in this country. That's not how it works anywhere. That pitch invader, what he did was wrong. And he should not, and I repeat, he should not be allowed back on a ground in England for the rest of his life. Until you see a pitch invader running on to the field and basically sneaking up behind a footballer and just sucker punching him from the side, in the side of his head, that's the only way you're going to get that said person. If his beliefs are not the same as yours, which I know most of you are not, that's the only way that guy will not return to an MLS match. Themselves into trouble first, guys. Let those people get themselves into trouble at an MLS game. Once that happens, that's the only way that those bastards will not threaten anybody. Other than that, I hate to say this, but I gotta be honest with everyone. Until they put themselves in a position where they get thrown out on their own recognizance, from their own stupidity, from their own foolishness, we can't ban them because they have not violated the code of conduct. I hate fascists. I hate Nazis. I hate white supremacists. May they all burn in hell. But the truth is, they can't be banned unless they destroy the code of conduct first. I'm sorry. I know you probably expect better out of me. But until they screw up royally, they just can't be banned because of their beliefs, political or not, the way it works in a free society. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I want to say welcome back to the show tonight. Later on, Mickey Turner will be joining me to talk about the current lawsuit by the U.S. Women's National Team on U.S. Soccer. But first, a recorded interview with my good friend. And you know what happened? I forgot to add it on. Silly, stupid me. So hang on one second. Let me just – it's been a really busy week for me, unfortunately. A lot of things going on in my life personally, sadly. But we'll have it on. It'll be quick. Hopefully it'll be quick. We'll have him on one, two, three here. So let me just go ahead and load it up real quick. But, you know, it's going to be with my good friend Patrick Quinn. As he's going to talk about the recent situations with the Colorado Rapids. Of course, we've seen what happened already. They've already dropped Ezekiel Gashi, who's no longer with the club. So as we go ahead and just want to make sure it's being processed, hopefully it'll be ready to go. If not, that's my bad. There we go. So let's go ahead and get to the studio. And as it's processing right now, let me just say this. As you're waiting for it, there it is. Good. One, two, three. It's already processed. It's in the audio bin. And now here it is, Colorado Rapids reporter, Patrick Quinn, on the state of the Colorado Rapids.
Daniel Feuerstein back once again, the American Soccer Show here, Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show, as we talk about everything going on in the United States of the world game. Join me right now, my good friend and colleague, of course, my Colorado Rapids reporter, the one and only Patrick Quinn joining me. How's it going, Quinny, and how are you tonight?
It's going pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Things are fine. Before we get to the main crux of our segment tonight, so far, two matches in, I have to say a very entertaining 3-3 draw, and anytime the snow falls in the Colorado State area or in the Denver area, it's always entertaining when the orange ball comes out. And, of course, a tough loss on the road in Seattle, down 2-0. But still, though, do you see some positives, even though you have a draw at home and a loss on the road?
Yeah, I think there's some positives. Our midfield's definitely a lot stronger. We move the ball a lot more effectively, and I think generally the overall talent of the roster is definitely upgraded over last year.
Yeah, I mean, I would have to say so. I mean, you know, so far I think Benny Feilharber, Kai Kamara, you can tell with Kai Kamara scoring the first goal of the season for the Rapids, you can see how he's determined to play. You see how he still has that determination. Nothing has dropped off. That's where I think it's going to be a positive for the Rapids to have Kai Kamara up top and scoring the Rapids tons of goals.
Yeah, he was definitely a big addition, and his work rate's incredible. And, I mean, he tracks back in defense, too. I mean, he's all over the pitch. I mean, it's pretty amazing at his age that he's still got that much energy.
No, absolutely. I mean, I just think that right now it's a good sign to start off the season with Kai Kamara. And what have you seen from Benny Feilharber right now in the midfield? What has he proven to you that he's in it to win it for the Rapids?
His link-up play is really effective, and that's kind of the biggest thing is that he can come back and help defend, but he can push forward and attack as well. But he's definitely a effective link that kind of frees up guys like Jack Price to play more of the role of an enforcer, or Acosta to play a bit more of a playmaker. But yeah, it's really nice having an effective two-way midfielder.
No, it really is, and hopefully more success for the Rapids in 2019. But once again, it's still early in the year. It's only two matches in the league season. So we'll see what happens as we move on with this current season right now in MLS for the Colorado Rapids. Now, the main crux of the segment, of course, is the release of Gashi, Zashikiel Gashi. What did Hudson see that he felt that he didn't need him anymore? And, or was it a mutual separation that they decided to part ways? Why is Gashi no longer on the Rapids?
Well, they had already come to an agreement for him to leave the club about 3 weeks before they announced it. I know that much, but it was, you know, Poreg and Hudson weren't big fans of Gashi's. They had issues with his work rate, and he always struggled to kind of stay healthy, and that was a really big issue. And they basically kind of built the roster this year without him in their plans at all. So I think they were maybe going to plan on keeping him around, but I don't think he was effective enough in the preseason to really convince them that he was worth keeping, so they cut him loose.
No, I mean, I can understand that. I mean, if it sounded like he was going to leave anyway, I mean, what's the point of keeping him around and just, you know, hanging around for the hell of it? I mean, if he's not going to be effective and he's not going to put himself in a position where he's supposed to help the Rapids, then I can understand why they're letting him go. I mean, since he left, do you feel there's been better continuity? Even though it's only been two matches, obviously, but do you feel like maybe there's more continuity with the players and some of the newer signings that came over? Obviously, I mean, did he look strong during preseason training at all, or no?
No, he was largely absent from preseason training, as far as I understand. But, you know, it's kind of really hard to gauge how much he contributed or how little he contributed to the team just because he didn't play much. I mean, he spent most of last season injured, and he featured a little bit towards the end of the season, you know, when we weren't making the playoffs and they were just kind of experimenting and that sort of thing. But it wasn't really particularly noticeable. I mean, he didn't play a huge factor last year, and it didn't look like the way they were constructing the roster that he was going to play much of a factor this year either. But it's kind of the way Hudson and them had it set up. But I think they were, and the biggest thing that Plorek has been emphasizing is that he's waiting for DP contracts to fall off so he can start signing new DPs, and I think they just cut him loose early so they could actually start looking for somebody potentially this summer.
And so far, what have you liked from Anthony Hudson? Obviously, last year was a bit of a learning curve. He's just coming into Major League Soccer. What have you liked so far, you know, in these first two matches from Hudson, that he's not afraid of making changes, or at least, you know, pushing the envelope and pushing their buttons to get them going?
I think tactically, like the substitutions he made in the Portland game especially were extremely well done. I mean, you go down a man, you're down to 10 men about 20 minutes in, he makes two adjustments, and we're pretty much competitive in the game again. I mean, that's pretty impressive, considering we're going up against a team that, you know, has played together, and they came off of being MLS Cup runners-up. So, I mean, that's pretty encouraging, but it is still early days, and I think tactically we didn't do particularly bad in the Seattle game, but I think that was more down to individual players more than anything, why we went down two goals so early in that match.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I mean, you know, I was shocked to see fourth minute, sixth minute, you know, two goals being converted real fast, and, you know, that's not Timmy Howard at all. I mean, then again, you know, you can't really blame Tim Howard when your defense is just not ready to go, or they just haven't woke up yet. But still, though, plenty more days ahead for the Rapids going forward. But so far, you know, you said you'd be pleasantly surprised you know, the Rapids could do something good this year. And I, like we've already said, it's already early days. We have, can't really worry about it too much right now. But are you liking what you're seeing so far early on, or do you feel that there's an issue that has to be corrected?
I think there's room for improvement. I mean, my biggest concern right now, to be honest, is our defense. And we're having like fourth and fifth choice guys start at center back against Seattle, and that played no small role in why we went down two goals in the first 8 minutes. But my question really is kind of leveled at the medical staff and the, you know, the team trainers. I mean, I don't know what's going on. We've barely played any games, and we're already scraping the barrel trying to get, you know, a solid back line. I don't know what they're doing in training or what kind of regiment the players are on, but that's kind of a cause of concern to me. I mean, you can kind of theorize about how well your team's going to do when everybody's healthy, but injuries are largely inevitable, and if we can't cope with having a couple guys hurt, then, you know, it's going to be another long season.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And, well, hopefully not. You know, you're hoping to see what was going to happen, and, you know, you're hoping to see about, you know, possible changes this year. So, I'm going to have to give Mr. Hudson some time here, obviously, to go forward. But other than that, how are you seeing this Western Conference right now? What, in your opinion, this Western Conference currently, what does it look like to you? And do you see the Rapids trying to fight for one of those playoff spots?
I think optimistically we'll be a mid-table team, maybe challenging for that last one or two spots. But, you know, it's still kind of early. I think Seattle looks like a pretty strong team. I think they'll be, you know, one of the higher teams up in the table. Minnesota's been a big surprise. I mean, they've done really, really well so far in these first couple games. But, again, it really is still early. And, I mean, you've been doing this long enough, you know that how teams start at the beginning of the year is very rarely how things end up finishing.
No, absolutely. I mean, basically, it's like it's nice to see how you start, but then it's all about how you finish. And I think last year we had a shield race in the Eastern Conference. Everyone thought Atlanta United was going to take the supporters' shield on the final day. You know, or should I say they're going to run away with the supporters' shield throughout 2018. And here come the Red Bulls. And on the last day of the regular season, they take the silverware home. And Atlanta United just falls a little bit short on a poor road trip to Toronto, and they get blasted 4-1. So all I can say is that it's going to be very interesting to see what's going to happen. And now all of a sudden, I don't know if you've heard this or not, but apparently Atlanta United fans are already begging for Frank DeBoer to be fired already.
Yeah, I have seen the whining on Twitter, yes.
Too early? Or can you comfort them?
Way too early. They are so spoiled. They've barely played any games at all, and they have a little bit of Champions League stuff. I'm not exactly sure why they're upset about the Champions League. It works out the same every year. You get MLS teams that do okay, and then they hit a wall once they play Mexican teams that are in mid-season form. So, yeah, I think they're completely spoiled and have wildly unrealistic expectations because they had two good, amazing early years.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. And, you know, look, Chicago Fire, I mean, they won the MLS Cup Championship and the U.S. Open Cup in 1998 in their first ever MLS season of existence. And, look, I mean, that was an amazing feat, but, you know, we'll never see that ever again. But still, though, it's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen, you know, if we ever get something like that when Miami comes into play, Austin FC comes into play, Nashville SC comes into play in MLS. So it should be exciting to watch what's going to happen there. But still, you know, we'll see what happens going forward with this 2019 season. We can't really get ahead of ourselves. And I know you're not. Like you've already said, you're going to sit back, relax, and watch what happens. But still, you know, if Hudson, you know, plays his cards right, you could be in line for a good season, which you are hoping for, of course.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. Hopefully, guys get a little more healthy on our back line. I mean, we can supplement the squad midsummer a little bit to kind of give us that extra boost.
That's exactly right. All right, Quinny, thank you very much. I'll talk to you next time, and have a good evening.
Yeah, sounds great. You too.
All right. Oh, I guess that's over in Seattle then. I want to thank Patrick Quinn, covering the Colorado Rapids, and joining me right now to discuss some legality issues in U.S. soccer. Once again, Mr. Mickey Turner, Esquire, a soccer lawyer, joined me. Are you at the airport?
I am on my way to a second meeting after I'm done with you, so I had to kind of squeeze it in. How's it going?
Okay. No, I'm doing all right. Things are going well. I know it's very busy over there. I mean, a lot of things going on in Seattle, obviously, and, you know, the 2019 season MLS is underway. Seattle, I believe, gets a solid victory in week one against the FC Cincinnati, and so far, Seattle's looking pretty good so far.
Yeah, they had a couple of nice wins. They looked pretty good, save for an early shock to the system against Cincinnati, but they rebounded pretty well and were able to, you know, put up a pretty dominating win. And then last Saturday, they were able to go take a nice victory over the Colorado Rapids. They were dynamic in the first 10 minutes, and then kind of, you know, from there just kind of cruised. So very different from the last several years when they've gotten off to terrible starts and had to pull their fat out of the fire during the midseason. So it's definitely a new experience for us down the stands up here.
No, absolutely. And we'll see what they'll do during the rest of the year. But, of course, first things first, we got some legality to discuss. Now, obviously, I find it interesting, but at the same time, maybe not such a coincidence that the U.S. Women's National Team has filed this lawsuit against U.S. Soccer on International Women's Day because of the problems that they see about some form of compensation or how much they get paid per match, because, you know, they feel they should get paid the same amount as the men do. What have you read about the lawsuit, and what is interesting about this situation currently they're filing against U.S. Soccer right now?
Yeah, so I've been working on a story for The Athletic. Hopefully it'll be out here in the next day or so, which kind of delves into the lawsuit. But this actually started way back in 2015 when the women were negotiating a new collective bargaining agreement. They raised these issues about equal pay back then and were unsatisfied with what U.S. Soccer had to say in response. They actually threatened to strike, and U.S. Soccer went to court to stop them from doing that. And so shortly after that, they filed a complaint with the EEOC, which is the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, back in 2016, basically alleging all the issues that they raised in the lawsuit. The thing that people will probably need to know is that in these particular circumstances, you have to exhaust your administrative remedies before you can actually go in and sue. And so that's why they went to the EEOC originally and filed this complaint. This is with Hope Solo, Megan Rapinoe, and a couple of other, Carly Lloyd, and a couple of other players. The problem was that they never received a response from the EEOC, at which point Hope Solo decided to sue, and then you had the remainder of the women file suit last Friday. So that's kind of the brief history of the issues, but this stretches back far longer than people may think.
Now, you know, I find it really peculiar, and I just don't understand why U.S. Soccer continues to act like there's like, you know, no form of fairness here. You know, I mean, you know, these women, regardless of how they perform, regardless of how many matches they play per year for their clubs, regardless of how many international matches they play for the country, why is it that they are still being considered – or maybe I should just be a little bit more direct. Why have they continued to be disrespected in this way?
So this, I would encourage, first of all, people to go read the lawsuit if you haven't. It's not very long, so it's available online. And maybe I'll post a copy to socceresq.com so people can take a look for themselves. But the gist of it is that the women, or the U.S. Soccer Federation, has told the women on multiple occasions that market realities, quote-unquote, preclude them from being on a completely equal, even playing field with the men. Now, whether that goes to whether the men bring in more money on a consistent basis or not, with sponsorships and, the games, high-profile matches, obviously a USA-Brazil game in the States is going to bring in a lot of money. The Copa America in 2016, that obviously brought in huge amounts of money, but, that's, I think, what they're using as the reasoning for not having gone to a pure equal playing field. Now, whether that's a legitimate reason is another issue, but that's the reason that the U.S. Soccer Federation is generally given for why they can't pay the women the same as the men.
Yeah, I mean, I understand the reasonings for that, but at the same time, we're seeing the popularity of the women's game improving each and every year. I mean, I remember back in the day, I probably you do as well, if it's not the U.S., it was the Chinese. If it wasn't just the Chinese, it would be the Norwegians. And those are the only three countries that actually took the women's game seriously. And then finally, you saw the Brazilian national, Brazilian FA was taking the women's game seriously. More European countries were taking the women's game seriously. And that's why the last Women's World Cup that was in Canada, you saw sold-out stadiums all over Canada for the women's game, and now we're going to see a big Women's World Cup in France this upcoming summer. And still, I just don't understand the current stance, whether it comes from Carlos Cordero or it comes from that board. If it comes from that U.S. Soccer board or that board of governors for U.S. Soccer Federation, I don't understand why they continue to act like this.
So, yeah, this is very interesting. And, the women's success on the pitch is beyond dispute. Three World Cup titles, massive marketing prowess. As you rightly say, they've helped spur the growth of women's soccer all over the world. And it should also be noted, and the women point this out in their lawsuit, is that they've made more money than the men did in one of the most recent cycles, the 2016-2017, between 2015 and 2017, we'll say, to lose money over that time. But thanks to the women's success in the World Cup and the Victory Tour and the corporate and sponsorships, they actually turned a massive profit for the federation. So, again, their contributions to soccer should not be understated. And that's why they have, a voice when they go into talks and negotiate with the federation and say, hey, look what we've done for you guys. It's time to now treat us fairly. And, they certainly have a good point. And so we'll see what happens going forward if the Federation's willing to, renegotiate some of these things. The women did sign a collective bargaining agreement in 2017. I think it runs for another couple of years. That doesn't mean that you can't renegotiate these things. But certainly, organizations like Adidas, the men's national team coming out and supporting this, there's going to be massive pressure for the Federation to open up negotiations again and make some accommodations for the women, going forward and get them on a more level playing field with the men.
No, absolutely. I think that's what we want to see. I think, I believe that the women are on the same playing field as the men. It's not just empowering the girls to become women, to do great things, whatever their profession is. But at the same time, are there places where it's equal? Yes. Are there places where it's not equal? Those places need to be fixed. And right now, the women here for the U.S. Women's National Team, I have to go along with them. I mean, I understand why they're doing it, and I'm glad to see them at least showing that there is an issue here that needs to be fixed.
Yeah, so there's a couple of interesting things, in the lawsuit that they point out, where the disparities are.
Mm-hmm.
One of the ones I think that got a lot of notice was the, the charter flight issue, where the men were being chartered basically to all their national games, where the women didn't have any one, according to, what they said. We'll assume it's true, just for, mm-hmm. Sake of this discussion. Things like that are things that the Federation could easily fix with, a modest increase in investment. Some of the things were fixed. The per diem issue which was definitely raised back in 2016, and in Hope Solo's lawsuit, which we haven't really discussed, but that's another issue. But you know, that has been fixed, and the tiers of the women are on parity with the men, or maybe even doing a little bit better. But either way, that's only one issue, and there's half a dozen other things that haven't been fixed by the Federation or are not on parity with the men. And so the women are certainly going to have their day in court to try to resolve these issues. Again, the Federation hasn't seemed to be too willing to address these issues at this point, probably because they have a collective bargaining agreement and think that they've already addressed some of these issues. But you can't bargain away your basic rights, and you can't bargain away a parity, really. So just because they signed off on a deal, if they find out that the disparity is massive, which it appears to be in many cases, the World Cup bonus is one glaring example, then they still have the opportunity to try to go back for the EEOC, or failing that, go to court and see if they can't get some resolution.
And that's the hope here. I mean, the hope is there's going to be some resolution. But I will say this, though, and I am agreeing with you about, they did sign the collective bargaining agreement. Do you think that's a bit of a negative for this lawsuit, because they have signed that collective bargaining agreement, that maybe the situation will not be resolved that quickly? Or do you feel that maybe, I don't know, maybe after the Women's World Cup in France, that maybe they'll come back to the table and have some discussions?
Boy, it's tough to say what the Federation's going to do at this point. I did, ask them for a comment, and they were still formulating a response. Obviously, they're going to have their attorneys on board to answer to this lawsuit. But as far as whether they come back before, the Women's World Cup or shortly thereafter, I would tend to doubt it. That's just, speculating. I don't have any inside information on that. But, it probably behooves them to try to do something, because obviously with the World Cup, Women's World Cup coming up here, there's going to be a lot of focus on the Federation and, a lot of negative publicity potentially. So it would be in their best interest to try to come to the table. But they may point to the fact that, they signed off on the collective bargaining agreement, and, they have, several more years left on the deal, and they're bound by it. Now, again, I said you can't bargain away basic, fundamental rights. As part of your agreement, but that's certainly an argument that the Federation may use to try to say, they're bound by, the agreement they made.
Well, once again, I always feel these lawsuits are a little tricky. Hopefully they'll weave through them carefully. You hope that both parties will come to an agreement on this lawsuit, and you just want to see everyone not worry about these form of legalities. You just want to see the women go out, get these friendlies underway, and get ready for a big summer in France, and hopefully a fourth Women's World Cup title. That's all you can hope for in reality.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's nice for me as a lawyer and a writer to write about these things, but I'd much rather be writing about these, writing about the game on the field. And there's, I'm sure the Federation is tired of being sued. By my count, they've got four major lawsuits in front of them at the moment, and none of them are particularly close to being resolved. So, it would behoove them to try to come to the table, not just from the PR sake, but, to save some time and expense and attorney fees and to keep people from writing about it.
No, absolutely. But other than that, before I let you go, any fun things going on in your athletic days? Anything going on good? Everything's going well?
I was a part of the Sounders had a media match, which was not very fun for me because I'm not in great shape at the moment. But it was fun to get on CenturyLink Field and play a soccer match, full field, full 90 minutes with halves and all that fun stuff. I was out there for about 20 minutes, which was probably about 18 more minutes than I was deserving of being out there. So it was fun all the same, and I look forward to doing it next year, except for just maybe just calling it from the stands.
If the Red Bulls ever have a media match, I'm going to play goalkeeper because I can't do anything else. Anyway, well, Mickey, thanks again for coming on. I appreciate it. You go ahead and have your head over to your event, and I'll talk to you again soon. All right, thank you very much.
great talking with you. Talk to you later.
All right, talk to you later. Mickey Turner, soccer lawyer, The Athletic, as we go ahead and finish up the show. No Red Bulls hour today because they had the weekend off, so they're concentrating on their CONCACAF Champions League action, which will continue on tomorrow night, and CCL action, of course. All four American clubs are in trouble, maybe with the exception of Sporting Kansas City that did get their away goal in Panama, yet that's still a bit of an issue. So we'll see what happens there. And don't forget this coming Friday night, CONCACAF Champions League quarterfinals second leg review show. Hopefully we'll have a surprise result by some of these clubs. Starting off, of course, tomorrow night, 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific. Santos Laguna will be hosting the New York Red Bulls. And at 11 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Pacific, Tigres will be hosting the Houston Dynamo that's Tuesday the 12th. On Wednesday the 13th, Atlanta United hosting Monterrey at Mercedes-Benz Park Stadium, and then Sporting Kansas City at Children's Mercy Park hosting Club Atletico Independiente of Chirrera from Panama. That's an 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific start times. English, once again, on yahoosports.com. Spanish, Univision Deportes on your cable channels. It should be a lot of fun. And very soon, everybody, we're going to be very, very close, within a little under a month, as we will be ready for the final round of qualifying for the 2019 Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. Once again, let us remind you of these matches in Massachusetts, Safira FC hosting West Chester United SC. We also have Virginia United taking on World Class Premier. We have North Texas Rayados taking on Maritza FC from St. Louis. El Paso Southwest FC taking on FC Denver. Soccer Soldiers taking on the American Soccer Club. That's the Florida end of things. And in the western end of stuff, Southern California, Winds FC against Cal FC. And Academica SC against Inter Portland Select. Of course, those seven winners will be joining the Milwaukee Bavarians in the first round draw, which will be done on the 10th of April on Wednesday, believe around noontime. So it should be exciting. It should be a lot of fun. You know, I personally cannot wait to see what's going to happen with the draw. Once again, USL League 2 teams, formerly the PDL. Also, USL League 1, the NPSL, the remaining 8 amateur clubs that will be a part of this first round after this qualifying round happens, the final qualifying round. So we'll see what happens as we move on into the first round of the first round draw and see who's going to face whom in the opening round, which will be on Wednesday, May the 8th. And some great new things, of course, are coming through. We'll get to those actually next week. I want to finish up the show here with, of course, reviewing the first weekend, the first round of the very first USL Championship League, which is officially the second division of American soccer. So here we go. Friday, March 8th, Tacoma Defense, a 1-0 victory over the Rio Grande Valley Toros. On Saturday, March the 9th, St. Louis FC defeating India 11, 2-1. North Carolina FC defeating Louisville City 4-1. Reno 1868 and Orange County SC with a 2-2 draw. Memphis 901's home opener losing 1-0 to the Tampa Bay Rowdies. Atlanta United 2 defeating Hartford Athletic 2-0. Charleston Battery and the Ottawa Fury with a 1-1 draw. Nashville 2, Loudoun United 0. Tulsa Roughnecks FC Portland Timbers 2 with a 1-1 draw. How about this? A 3-3 draw between San Antonio FC and Phoenix Rising FC. Not a bad start in 2019. El Paso Locomotive, their first home opener, losing to the OKC Oklahoma City Energy 3-1. New Mexico United with a 1-1 draw against Fresno FC. Colorado Springs Switchbacks with a 4-1 victory on the road against Los Dos, the LA Galaxy 2. Eric Winalda's first match as a manager of the Las Vegas Lights, a scoreless draw against Austin Bold FC. And then Sacramento Republic with a 1-1 draw with the Real Monarchs of Salt Lake City. Sunday, March the 10th, Birmingham Legion, home, first ever home opener at BBVA Compass Stadium, or Compass Field, I should say, on the campus of UAB, University of Alabama, Birmingham. That's on Sunday, March the 10th, losing to Bethlehem Steel by a final of 2-0. And for the New York Red Bulls, too, a 3-1 victory over Swope Park Rangers. And that's a big victory to start off 2019 for Red Bulls, too, as they go out and they get a solid victory over Swope Park Rangers, Sporting Kansas City USL affiliate. And once again, they switch over from the Western Conference to the Eastern Conference. Goals being scored by Tom Barlow in the 26th minute and the 62nd, with Marcus Epps getting some minutes in the 55th minute. Buries a hell of a shot to make it 2-1, the match winner. And then Hernandez for Swope Park Rangers, Felipe Hernandez, he gets the only tally for Swope Park Rangers as Red Bulls 2 knocks out Sporting Kansas City's USL affiliate, Swope Park Rangers, by final of 3-1. Excuse me. Now let's go to the next round of matches as we talk about the next round of games coming in for the USL Championship League. And it's going to start off on Friday, March the 15th. Charlotte Independence will be hosting Indy 11 at the Sportsplex at Matthews at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Atlanta United 2 taking on Louisville City FC at 5th Third Bank Stadium. Saturday, March the 16th, Real Monarchs hosting El Paso Locomotive at Zions Bank Stadium. Reno 1868 hosting Austin Bold FC at the Greater Nevada Field. Bethlehem Steel hosting North Carolina FC at the Talon Energy Stadium. Charleston Battery hosting Hartford Athletic at MUSC Health Stadium. Tampa Bay Rowdies hosting Pittsburgh Riverhounds at Al Lang Stadium. Birmingham Legion hosting Ottawa Fury at BBVA Compass Field. Colorado Springs Switchbacks hosting Sacramento Republic at Widener Field. Memphis 901 FC hosting Loudoun United at the AutoZone Park. Nashville SC hosting St. Louis FC at First Tennessee Park. Oklahoma City Energy FC hosting Las Vegas Lights at Taft Stadium. Rio Grande Valley hosting the Toros, hosting Fresno FC at the HEB Park. San Antonio FC hosting Portland Timbers 2 at Toyota Field. Orange County SC hosting Tulsa Roughnecks at the Championship Soccer Stadium at Orange County Great Park. Tacoma Defiance hosting the LA Galaxy 2 at Cheney Stadium. And finally, at 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time, Phoenix Rising FC hosting New Mexico United at the Phoenix Rising Soccer Complex. Head on over to USLsoccer.com. Or if you just want to go, you know, you can go there to take a look at all the leagues that they are under their umbrella: USL Championship, USL League One, USL League Two, under their USL network. So it should be a lot of fun for the second round. Can't wait to see what's going to happen then. And all I can say is that it's going to be a lot of fun. So here is what's coming up now for the Four Seasons Fire American Soccer Show this coming Friday once again. 2019 CONCACAF Champions League quarterfinals second leg review show. And then next Monday, we go back to a regular For Your Scenes Fire American Soccer Show, as we will recap, of course, the New York Red Bulls Hour coming back again. Also, we will discuss American soccer. In my opinion, of course, it is my show, of course, but my opinion is that we will see what fun things are going to happen as we country in American soccer. The For Your Scenes Fire American Soccer Show, dedicated to the game in these United States of America, also up in Canada. And finally, just to go back to what happened once again with Mr. Grealish of Aston Villa, I pray to God this does not happen again in England. I pray to God this does not happen anywhere else. We cannot lose our heads. I know it's a rivalries. Always important to have rivalries. It's good to jaw away. It's good to have a yelling match. It's good to do it in a calm, professional, and not in a reckless manner. And we cannot go over the line. You go over the line, it's just terrible. And not only does the person who did that suffers, but his fellow supporters will be suffering. And I'm going to assume that's going to be with Birmingham. With Birmingham, I wouldn't be surprised if they have a couple of closed-door matches, because you can't do that. You can't do that. And at the same time, I wouldn't be surprised if there's going to be bans, if there's going to be a road match for Birmingham, and their fans will not be allowed to travel for a game or two, depending on what the schedule is. So that's the end of that, and hopefully we will we hope never to see that craziness ever happen again. Not in England. I hope it'll never happen here in the United States, but you never know. All I ask from everybody is to keep their heads screwed on right. So I just want to say thank you very much to my guests tonight, Patrick Quinn on the recorded interview on the Colorado Rapids, and then, of course, Mr. Mickey Turner, Esquire, our soccer lawyer from The Athletic, as he comes in to talk about the lawsuit with the U.S. Women's National Team. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for listening to me tonight. It's a short show tonight, only for an hour. Get back to regular 2 hours next week. Thank you very much for listening tonight. And as always, please, I beg of you to enjoy your football. Thank you. Have a good night, everybody. Talk to you next time. So long, and bye-bye for now.